And so if you folks want to learn what gear to buy, how to tell a story, to be sort of jazzed about audio storytelling, to be enthused about it, you need to go to Transom. And Transom also are workshops. We have workshops on Cape Cod. They're 8 weeks long, twice a year. But we also travel around the country teaching people radio, and Catalina is one of the destinations. And so what's happened this week here is that nine people, I think all of them, well, save one, John, so eight people from around the country came to Catalina for the first time and produced a radio story. There's one person who's here from the island, John King, who of course knows the island, has been here for a while, but he's also produced his first story. And so what we're going to do today is listen to these stories that have been produced over the course of the week. And I think a really key thing to remember is that starting on Sunday, this last Sunday, there were no stories. The students hadn't gathered any tape. They haven't, they didn't know what the stories were going to be about. And in some cases, some of them have never used this gear before. So what you're going to hear is pretty damn amazing, to be honest with you, very shortly here.
And it's very special to all of us here. Most of us here on the island know the subjects of these interviews, and there's things that we're going to learn about them that we have never heard before, which is just a great feeling. We're all looking forward to the first interview. And who will be the first student who will be presenting the work?
Why don't we have him introduce yourself?
Hi, good morning. My name's Casey Martin. I'm from Seattle, Washington. And yeah, this is my very first time to beautiful Catalina Island. And just been a thrill to be here.
You've had a little bit of radio experience, right?
Yeah. I work at my college radio station, just doing a little bit of sound editing and sorting CDs and LPs, but nothing like this level of production work.
Really? So this is the first sort of radio story you've ever produced? Is that fair?
Yeah. I've tinkered with audio just in my bedroom, but nothing I would be proud to share over the airwaves.
Yeah. I think one thing people need to know is that thanks to Jordan Monroe, the students are assigned a person to do a story on. We feel like that just makes things a little bit easier for when the students arrive here on the island, that part of things has been taken care of. This particular week, things were a little bumpy at the beginning of the week. People who had agreed to do a story, something happened in their family, they had to take care of that, so they got ill, they changed their mind, and that happened with you. And so the students went out to record their stories on Tuesday morning, but you learned what your story was going to be Monday night.
Yeah, and which is great. And again, thanks to Jordan, he's just been a wonderful resource of quickly, getting people to set up time to meet. And it was a real pleasure because going into this, no idea how it was going to be, and then to have the story kind of change. But I knew I was in your faithful hands, trusty hands. It was great.
So what is it you do in an emergency like this? It's Monday night. You're going to go out into the field to report a story on Tuesday, something you knew nothing about until Monday night. Like, what was the first thing, after you panicked, what was the second thing that you did?
the second thing I did, so mine specifically was about a really great recycling program up at Avalon High. And so I immediately jumped online and see what I could find out. And it was great having, you mentioned John, he just knew so much about the island, knew so much about the residents. So it was wonderful to say, hey, John, can you fill me in on that? And just a really great resource, I think for all of us to really kind of lean on him and ask the backstories of people and how they got to the island. That's where I headed immediately. It was John and what I could find out online.
Excellent. Well, let's listen to the story.
You know that you've reached Tina Newhart's class at Avalon High School because, unlike the other classrooms, there's garbage everywhere. Garbage bags stacked higher than me, stuffed with used plastic water bottles. And when I asked one of her students what they were doing outside with all these bags of trash, he told me,
"It's when we're done with our work, sometimes we come out here, do cushion bottles, go back in with the teacher asks, then the next day we finish our work again, we do it, just doing it again and again and again."
And why is this teacher having her students crush bottles after their classwork? Severe drought conditions on Catalina Island have led to strict water rationing. The island's solution? Restaurants no longer serve glasses of water, but plastic bottles instead. This has created an explosion of recyclable waste. Trash cans on street corners overflow with the stuff. Tina soon saw an opportunity.
We started it this year. It started as a very small idea over the summer with the drought. And I thought, well, I can't make a big difference, but if each one of the kids in the classroom just recycles the plastic water bottles that they bring to class, you know, we could make a couple $100s and have a good role model for the kids to learn about keeping the planet safe.
This effort to help the environment and make some money for the class immediately took off for the kids. One of the bottle crushers told me about his experience.
And you collect your recycling at home? Do you bring it here?
Yes, if we get like loads of water bottles, we will each bring it here. So it's not only the hotels and shops that bring it here, it's the students too.
Oh, they love it. And they're so proud when they see one of their family members sneak up and drop off a bag. I can just see them peeking out the window and that's my dad, that's my uncle, that's my mom that's dropping off. And I can see that they're very proud of what we've done.
Since September, the class has crushed over 26,000 bottles.
That's a lot of bottles and cans. And it's been a really lucrative program for the kids. They've gotten enough money that they paid for express tickets for every student and paid for the admission to the Long Beach Aquarium for every student. And since then, we've continued to collect bottles and we've earned even more money since then. That'll give us a nice little start for next year's class.
The rate of bags of bottles dropped off at Tina's class isn't slowing. One student described it, appropriately enough, as a waterfall of bottles. While other kids their age are enjoying the last few days of school, Tina's students sort through the city's garbage. Often ravens tear open the bags, and the kids run out waving their arms to scare them away. When they get to school, they work efficiently. Remove the lids, crush the bottles, fill the boxes. Oh, and about those lids?
Well, our teacher, she takes these lids to another place to make new legs for like these people.
And they make prosthetic legs,
yeah.
Fake legs?
They make them for the people that have at least no leg. Yeah.
Other teachers at Avalon High have set up their own fundraising programs for their classes. But there's something that sets Tina's apart. See, Tina doesn't live on Catalina Island. She commutes every day from the mainland to teach. So to transport these 26,000 bottles?
Almost all the bottles that we've recycled, I've carried onto the barge and then off of the barge and into my car and then to my home and stored them till Saturday. And then Saturday morning is the process of getting all of them back into my car, taking them to the recycling center. So it has been a sacrifice of time, but it's worth it.
Tina told me what her friends and family say when she adds 6 boxes of garbage to her daily commute.
All of them are like, Tina, you're crazy for doing this. But, you know, if I'm not a model for the kids, then I can't expect them to learn the lesson that I'm trying to teach them about taking care of the planet.
So when you see Tina lugging those dollies of trash onto the Catalina Express, don't be surprised.
Here comes Mrs. Newhart with her boxes.
The tens of thousands of water bottles these kids have sorted through is just a fraction of the city's problem with mounting trash. As school lets out and tourist season begins, it'll take more of a response from the island community than just this grassroots effort from 10 and 11-year-olds. On Catalina Island, I'm Casey Martin for KISL.
And that was Casey Martin interviewing school teacher Tina Newhart here at the Avalon School. Rob, that was amazing when he was describing the ravens attacking the student as he's trying to collect the recycling bottles. I can completely relate to that. We have some very fierce ravens here on the island.
I've never seen so many clever ravens in one location before. It's pretty amazing around here. It's a little scary, actually. It's a little Hitchcockian, maybe.
Absolutely.
I thought Casey had done a little bit of radio before he came here. So when he was just sitting here a couple moments ago and said he'd never produced a radio story like this before, I was a little blown away. I thought he dabbled at least, but no, that's not the case. That's pretty amazing. And I think that's true for our next person as well. Would you introduce yourself, please?
I am John King, known around the island as Captain John. I do live on Catalina Island, and just finished an amazing experience with you, Rob. Thank you for that.
It's been my pleasure, and it's been really wonderful having you in the class. You help orient us to the island and fill in some of the blanks for us. So this is the first time you've picked up a microphone, yeah?
Absolutely.
What was that like?
Because you did a pretty good job of telling us exactly how to hold the microphone, it was much easier than I'm sure it would have been if I tried to learn this on my own, for sure. But it was exciting. I was surprised to hear, most... when you hear your own voice, it's usually a shock. I was surprised it wasn't nearly as terrible to listen to as I had suspected it might be, so it was fun.
Yeah, how long have you lived on the island?
Oh, well, I've been coming and fishing the island since I was 11, so that's about 49 years. But we moved onto the island about 2002, 2003. We started our kind of migration, staying longer and longer periods in the house that we built. And then when our kids were, by the way, shout out to our kids. Hi, Caitlin. Hi, Dylan. Hi, Allison. And hi, Karen. When they were all at off to college, we pretty much started living here full time and love it.
I bet your kids hate you for that.
Yeah.
So you just spent a week with eight people from away. I lived in Maine for 20 years, and if you're not from Maine, you're from away. So I don't know what the phrase
over
is.
Over here, it's over town.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you just, what did you learn about the island that you didn't know after having spent this time with these people from away?
So this is the softball question?
Yeah.
You know, it was fascinating. I sat in the room and I watched these people. You can't imagine what it is like to come to this island and experience the island the way these eight people experienced it. They were so, I mean, you worked them like dogs. They're working long hours, but they got to see the island in such a different way. Each of them interviewed people who have various just incredible backgrounds. What we discover here on Catalina Island is as you start to meet the people who come to the island and start to understand their stories, it's fascinating who ends up here. And the workshop gave me really incredible insight. I'm really excited about hearing the stories that we have to come.
And let's hear your story. Is there anything we need to know about it before we start?
Well, my story is about a young firefighter who basically lives on the island, Jorge Hernandez, and I really appreciated him giving the time. Thank you, Jorge. Thanks to the fire department. Thanks, Chief. But he really had some adversity that I had never known about. You know, you look at a person and you see this big, strong kid, and you go, oh, well, of course, he's going to be a firefighter, just a given. But no, he had a couple of steps along the way.
Excellent. Let's take a listen.
Okay, I'm going to add just one thank you before we start, which is to the Catalina Island Performing Arts Foundation for sponsoring an islander to participate in this particular workshop. That's Susan Marion Offield, Jordan Monroe, Christy Linz, Glenn Robson, and Shaunin Hill. Thank you.
Sirens are background noise in big cities. In the small town of Avalon on Catalina Island, neighbors pay keen attention when the sirens wail, knowing it could be a friend in need. Jorge Hernandez was 4 years old when the siren sound touched him.
Before I was in school, but I lived in Eucalyptus Street. There's a structure fire down the street from my house.
Little Jorge saw the trucks with the firefighters that saved his friend. Jorge was hooked. It was then he knew he wanted to become a firefighter.
It was one of my friend's house. It was a two-story building. That was the first time I ever seen the actual firefighters, do a structure fire. They actually pulled him out, and I got to see it, and it was incredible.
Being a firefighter is a pretty common dream for kids, but most find new heroes as they age, a baseball player, an actor, or a drummer, but not Jorge.
Going to school, I remember I always drew pictures of firefighters, and all my friends throughout the years, they're like, oh, you're so annoying with your drawings. And so it's like, you know, I want to be a firefighter.
In high school, Jorge was an athlete. Tall, more than 6 feet, very broad-shouldered and ripped. He could have been a pro. Jorge had other ideas. He was certain to become a firefighter. It was a clear future. He would do his coursework, pass the test, and earn a uniform. Nothing would stop him.
Throughout school, I knew what I wanted, and so I kind of stuck to it and always read books. And
but then something did stop him.
My senior year in high school, I had a stroke, but that was pretty tough. Lost my memory, my speech. I was in the hospital for 5 days.
The body that had grown so big and strong failed him. His dreams took a back seat to simpler things like walking and talking.
My right side was a little weak. After I got cleared, I had to get my strength back from running to working out. And I mean, it took probably a year or a little bit more to regain full strength.
Slowly, Jorge made progress, but doubt crept into his thoughts even after getting clearance from his doctor.
The fact that all my friends are like, oh man, like, oh, you could have died and everything. And mentally, it was tough. For me, it's like, okay, why did it happen, and can it happen again?
It did not happen again. But firefighter openings are few and far between, especially on Catalina Island. 8 years after graduating, Jorge was still not a firefighter.
Traveling, taking the test, and you get the bad news you didn't pass, or oh, you didn't get chosen for the interview. It was to the point that I was like, man, this is really hard work, and I almost said, you know what, I'm going to try to do something else.
There were no easy answers, but Jorge had a secret weapon.
Mom, she was always the support, you know. She always said, like, hey, if you want to do it, do it. Don't listen to anyone. And
to say that Jorge is a persistent guy would be an understatement. After years of dreaming, training, studying, and testing, Jorge finally put on the uniform of a firefighter.
For my dad, for him to see me in the uniform, I think it was a big eye-opener for him.
When you talk with Jorge about his job at the station, you know he made the right choice. Got a task nobody wants to do? Firefighter Hernandez will do it.
Like a main water break or something. I'm the guy that, hey, George, go in there and get wet and stop the leak. So, but it's fine. You know, I love it.
And for breakfast?
Life cereal.
Firefighter Hernandez made some clear life choices early on, but life threw him a couple of curveballs. And today, he has a new goal.
So I want to be the best firefighter that Avalon Fire has ever had.
For KISL on Catalina, this is John King.
Wow, what a great story. It reminded me that George, all through school, he had never missed a single day of school until he had that incident. He was perfect attendance.
Yeah. I just want to say, too, that I heard a lot of applause just now, and that means there's a big audience outside. So if you're thinking about, you're trying to figure out what to do this afternoon, you should come on down to KISL, listen to some radio stories, eat some food. We'd love to have you down here at the radio station.
Yeah, and it looks like there's plenty. So, yeah, no worries. If you get here within the next 45 minutes, you'll catch some great stories, eat a great lunch, and we'll welcome you down here to the station.
If you're wondering what's happening to your radio, my name is Rob Rosenthal. I live on Cape Cod, and I'm a radio instructor. I travel the country, and I teach on the Cape. I teach people how to produce stories for public radio and for audio tours and podcasts and things like that. And the next person up is...
Hi, I'm Miles Yim. I'm from Culver City, California, but that's where I live. I'm actually from Newbury Park, California. Southern California, it's all the same thing.
What do you do during the day?
I am an equity options trader, which is a fancy way of saying that I gamble for a living.
So why on God's green earth would you want to do radio?
In college, I went to UCSB, Santa Barbara, and I worked for 3 years at KCSB. I was a sports reporter. That's how I got in, and I really enjoyed doing it. We would do this magazine show 3 times a week called the Gaucho Sports Spot, and I would just report game facts from women's volleyball to men's tennis, whatever they needed. Then I sort of moved up the food chain. I was a sports broadcaster and was sitting doing play-by-play or color commentary to the university's biggest sports, men's soccer, men's basketball. And then in my third year, I became the sports director. So I became a part of the executive committee. And I always loved the experience of producing and being on radio, not just from the sports side, but from the news side as well. And I wanted to come back to it now that I have so much time on my hands. The market closes at 1.
So your story is about a harbor patrolman, which meant that you had to go out on a boat. And radio listeners may not know this, but I'll tell you, it's really hard to record well on a boat. Can you describe, like, the challenges of putting together a story that's chock full of engine noise?
Yeah, I had to, like, position myself between William, my subject, and the engine, which was constantly going, and also the boat kept changing trajectory. So we were going into the waves, and then suddenly we would turn to the left, and then we were going, you know, the waves were hitting us on our sides, the boat would rock a lot, so my placement was always shifting. There's a lot of ambient noise, but I think I tried to express in the piece how that forms a picture. And it's not as easy as you think it is, but I found it to be, you know, pretty rewarding at the end.
Anything we need to know else about the story?
Not really. He's sort of very self-explanatory. A couple of quotes in, you'll know exactly who he is.
Excellent. Let's do it.
Grab and William Flickinger is quick to spot a problem. Almost immediately after boarding boat 4, William declares it unfit for travel.
Well, we're not taking this boat.
The engine is leaking oil. Boats that run out of oil become dangerous drifting hazards, even small 21-foot motorboats like boat 4. Luckily, it's still tied to the dock. This is exactly the kind of emergency the Avalon Harbor Department is here to help with. Except that this time, it's happened to one of their own patrol boats.
When I just checked it just now, the dipstick was in, but it just barely touches the end. My name is William Flickinger. I work for the Avalon Harbor Department. 51 years old. Been with the city for about 20 years, on the island about 29 years now.
William is one of 11 full-time harbor patrolmen responsible for Avalon Bay. He's tall and thin and looks a little boyish. William's the first face most boaters meet when they arrive. Need to park your boat? Help tying down? Dinner recommendation? William's got you covered. He's a bit like an island concierge. That is, the concierge was also the police.
We try and be the nicest, most helpful, politest people out there so that you want to come back. But when you get someone that's unruly or out of line, then you have to step in with your other hat and be the law enforcement side. And again, you try and do that as nicely and politely and courteously as you can. When you have to do it, though, for everyone's safety, you have to do it.
Before he can help anyone else, William first has to help himself. Right now, he's on the phone with a harbor mechanic.
Okay, so it's okay to drive over there to the fuel repair barge? Or rescue float? Okay, very good.
William gets permission to drive boat 4 across Avalon Bay, where a mechanic will look at it. The harbor is busy. It's a cruise ship day, which adds hundreds of tourists to the island. Many of them will rent kayaks or paddle boats at the harbor. Their safety and enjoyment is paramount to William. He knows the stats.
As you've probably heard, if you have a negative experience, you tell 25 or 30 people. If you have a positive experience, you tell about 5. So we got to keep people happy.
And William really wants to keep people as happy as possible. But even for him, there's a line. Alcohol.
Well, we have two kinds of drunks. You have your happy drunk that you'll do anything you can to help, and then you have your mean, angry drunk that just wants to fight, yell, scream. And those are the ones that stick out in your mind, the ones that you have to call the sheriffs for, have them come down and do their job. And the reason you remember it so much is because when they come to and they're coherent again, they've just ruined their day with a BUI, an arrest, all because they're an angry drunk instead of a happy drunk.
William admits that drunks who boat under the influence, BUI, are the small minority. Today, he has bigger problems. It's windy offshore, which means that boaters are more likely to moor in the harbor than stay out at sea. William has to make sure everyone parks in the right spot and ties down correctly so their boat doesn't drift. He's got eyes like an osprey, constantly spotting problems you or I would miss.
Like when a line is hanging off the bow, if it has a knot in it, that shouldn't be there. Or if the knot on the bow is a square knot instead of a bowline. Things that you can tell that have been messed with by someone inadvertently and needs to be fixed so that when they drop it in the water, it doesn't just float away.
William drops boat 4 off with a mechanic and hops aboard boat 6. Greg Warner, another veteran patrolman, is the pilot. William and Greg slowly make their way toward Descanso Beach, where they come across a white sailboat named the Glimpse. It's slowly dragging anchor into the middle of the mooring field. Greg calls out to the Glimpse's owner.
I can tow you out into deeper water if you want.
Yeah, that's all I need. I don't have anybody else.
In this wind, the Glimpse could hit other boats, maybe even the shore. Its anchor's so light, the owner could pull it up himself, by hand.
Anytime you can lift up your own anchor in our anchorage, it's not heavy enough.
A few minutes later, the owner finishes pulling up anchor. William tosses him a yellow tow line tied to the back of boat 6, and Greg hits the gas. After about 100 yards, the tow ends, and the Glimpse begins to raise sail. The yellow tow line is still attached.
Take the yellow line out for us, please. Just let throw it right in the water. Right in the water.
Drop it.
Throw it. Throw it. Throw it. Thank you.
As the Glimpse sails away, William gets a call on his cell. It's the mechanic, He says the dipstick came loose for some reason, which allowed oil to seep out below the engine. Human error, not uncommon on the high seas. Fortunately for the rest of us, we've got William. He'll keep us anchored to safety. For KISL on Catalina Island, I'm Miles Yim.
All right. Great profile of the Harbor Patrol, and those guys save lives every year. It's an amazing job.
And what's stunning, I think that Miles did a really good job of helping us see what the patrolman sees. Miles, regularly in class, he would be like, look, I look out there, I see boats tied to moorings. That's all I see. You know, but the patrolmen, they see something entirely different. And I think he got it right, too, when he said that, you know, they look at the harbor like an osprey. They've got that sort of laser vision to see things that the rest of us can't see. So I think he did a great job with it.
Yeah, I'm really glad that he gave his time to do the story. And I'd love to hear more of the stories of the people who work out there on the harbor next year when Transom comes back. Right?
There you go. Yeah. Actually, let's line them up now.
Absolutely.
Actually. Hey, before we go on, I have to give a shout out to Dave Weinberg for helping out in the class. He's an awesome teaching assistant. Huge applause out in the crowd. Mm. Well deserved. David has a radio heart. And I'm glad he brought it out to the island and spent time with us. Thank you, David.
Yeah, I think David can take credit for introducing you to KISL as well. So yeah. A big thanks to David Weinberg.
So let's move on to our next producer. Could you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Stephanie Powell from San Francisco, California.
What do you do up there?
I work at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, and I'm the content producer for mobile.
What does that mean?
That means I work on the team to develop the mobile app for the museum, and then I also work on the stories that go into it.
And so you came to the workshop. Why did you come to the workshop?
You know, because I've been a tinkerer my entire life, and audio is something I'm just absolutely obsessed with, listening to radio all the time. It's always on at our house, listening to podcasts all the time. And most of my work, you know, I farm it out to other people, and I wanted to really do it, you know, learn how to make it from soup to nuts.
What's something that you learned this week that you may take back to the job?
I mean, the entirety of the week. To be honest with you, I think like self-editing and, you know, I have dabbled in the past with my own, you know, podcasting. But I think, you know, my inclination was to let the tape kind of speak for itself. And what I learned is that, you know, sometimes to tell the story, you have to insert yourself. And I also got like incredible insight on how to write with my own voice. And I think, you know, obviously I can't accomplish that all in 1 week, but it's a good start, I think.
Give me a high five on that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Make good tape.
Yes, make good tape. Is there anything we need to know about this story before we hear it?
You know, I think Jens is just like was so generous with his time, and he's actually out there listening right now. Thanks for coming, Jens. And I don't know. I don't really have anything to add. I think he's got such a strong personality. It comes out in the audio, I hope.
Excellent. Let her rip.
If you were alive in the 1990s, you probably know this song. Jens Gad does, because he helped make that sound. Jens was born in Germany, but moved to Ibiza, Spain in 1993 to work with the band Enigma. And for the next 10 years, he ate, lived, and breathed Enigma. This song, The Return to Innocence, was the biggest hit of his life. By his late 20s, Jens was making lots of money, playing stadiums, jetting around the world, basically living the life of a rock star. But by 2003, he'd had enough. He left the band, left Ibiza, and moved to New York, a solo artist. A few years back, he moved to LA to be at the center of the music industry. He rented an apartment in Venice Beach, set up a home recording studio. He wrote pop songs because that's what seemed to sell in America. And though he wasn't getting rich, Jens made more than enough to survive. And then one day, he was looking out at the horizon and spotted Catalina Island. That view attracted him like a magnet. Within months, Jens moved permanently to the village of Avalon.
How many steps do you have going up to your apartment?
I think 82. Oh.
Life here is simple, wholesome. There's one pharmacy, lots of saltwater taffy, and golf carts are the fastest things around.
Perfect time.
Jens thought Catalina couldn't be more different than Venice Beach.
All right.
His music studio takes up most of his living room. There's an editing bay and synth, a mic on hand for vocals, a soundboard covered with dozens of keys and tuning knobs. When we arrive, the French doors are open to a sweeping view of Avalon. The cottages below look like sugar cubes against the dark green hills. It feels like we're looking at Catalina from the helm of a cruise ship.
Yeah, the big thing about islands is that you're physically cut yourself off the civilization society grid. And I think that is a very important thing dynamic-wise, because I'm supposed to come up with different ideas daily. My everyday life is so little, and so you can like overview it so easily, and there's nothing really happening.
Jens says the simplicity of village life fuels his imagination. He thinks being off the grid is key to developing a different sound.
Back in the 90s, Enigma was just a UFO from space. People could not imagine how Latin lyrics sung from monks together with French talking with the R&B loop underneath, how that could ever go on the charts and be approachable.
Jens credits Enigma and its founder, Michael Cretu, with teaching him everything he knows about making music. To be intuitive, to think beyond 8-bar measures, and to use non-musical sounds. One of Enigma's chorus melodies is built off the sound of a passing car. For years, Enigma was his only source of income.
That was all I did. I built the studio that was cloned to Michael Cretu's. We had the exact same equipment, and he mainly wanted me there all the time for Enigma albums, which was great, but then you want to eventually move on. You want to be more than just the Enigma co-producer. I wanted to create more like my own sound.
The path to finding his own sound hasn't always been easy.
You know, I seem like a happy person, right? And I got rejected 5 million times. I can maybe sell 5% of what I'm doing. And thanks to someone up there, I somehow survive, and I'm happy, and I do what I like.
What was it like to be at that height of fame, and where have you gone since then?
You know, Enigma wasn't even my height of fame, because I was not Enigma myself. Like, I was just part of it. And suddenly everybody associated me with Enigma, but it wasn't my peak, I wouldn't say so. What probably was the greatest thing about my decade with Enigma was this approach to music production and songwriting, and I think I took it with me and did so much stuff.
I asked him to play me some samples. Jens puts on an album that he cut back in February, and immediately his eyes light up.
My body.
It's a track off an album he made with a meditation teacher named Amia. Since moving to the US, Jens has made more and more pop music. But right after leaving the band, he found himself making music that sounded, in his words, enigmatic. He even named one project Enigmatic Obsession.
And then Achillea, another one. And then I realized that they're obviously not Enigma, and I obviously can never earn millions and millions of dollars like Enigma did. So I kind of stopped doing it, because I thought this cannot go anywhere.
But lately, fans have been emailing him. They want him to record more enigmatic albums. He launched a crowdfunding campaign 2 weeks ago to do just that.
And right now, too, like, my most profitable project was this meditation teacher from Lithuania, not a pop song I produced. It's funny, I mean, I'm not like steering the boat myself. It's like a big dynamic happening with me. So I feel like I'm being pushed more towards the Enigma sound again.
Jens tells me he's found the secret to happiness. It's music. Down the road, he wants to share his wisdom through music camps on the island. For now, he's just really excited to play me the next track on Amia Inspiration. a meditation album with that enigmatic sound. For KISL on Catalina Island, I'm Stephanie Pau.
All right, we're getting a little feedback because we're listening live in Machine Gun Park, and we've got giant speakers set up, and sometimes they howl through the station. You know, it's part of doing something like a radio listening party, which isn't done very often, is it?
No, and it's live, so, you know, stuff's going to happen, and that makes it feel, it gives it a different energy than having everything packaged all the time.
And the smell of the smoky barbecue is something I'm not used to hearing, smelling inside the station as well, so.
I wish we had scratch and sniff radio. Maybe that would be, you know, a good thing. We want to invite people down. We're listening to radio stories for about Islanders produced by students in the Transom Story Workshop. We've been here for a week. I'm Rob. We've been here for a week producing stories out of thin air almost, but not exactly. We have to thank Jordan Monroe lining up all the people who agreed to participate in this. We thank you so much, Jordan. We couldn't have done it without you. You've been essential, for reals.
And this is not the first time the Transom Workshop has come to the island. This is the third time, and sometimes we look at each other and we go, do we have that many interesting people here on the island to interview? And the answer always is yes, we do. And it's just a question of getting people to agree to open up their lives to us, and the stories have been incredible.
And we have to thank the people who have participated in this, too, the people who have agreed to be interviewed and followed around with a microphone, I'm sure is all very weird. You know, and folks don't have to say yes. I mean, we want them to say yes, but they were willing to donate their time and open up their lives to us, and we can't thank the people of Catalina enough for their willingness to have strangers with microphones enter into their worlds.
A shout out to the Islanders, right on.
Great. Our next student is...
I'm Julia Oliver from Washington, D.C.
And what do you do when you're in Washington, D.C.?
I'm a communications officer for the World Bank, which means I write content for the web and write talking points for senior management and do all sorts of written work.
So what's the connection between working at the World Bank and coming to do a radio workshop on Catalina?
It's a lot different setting. There's a lot more ocean around. It was a really lovely experience, and it was really nice to be around people who love radio and who love sound, and I learned a tremendous amount.
What are you hoping to do when you get back?
I would really like to introduce to the World Bank some of what I've learned, and I think that it's a great medium for telling stories about international development and international aid to poor countries around the world. So I hope I can make some headway in introducing that and getting it started.
Here's one great thing about a microphone. It gives you, it's a passport. It's almost like a magic wand, some people call it, but it's a passport for you to go places and talk to people and learn things that you wouldn't have a chance to do if you didn't have the microphone. And so where did you get to go for your story?
So I went on a lovely tour of the interior of the island on Skyline Drive, is what it was called, with Miriam. She was a great guide, and she was very generous in letting me interview her here in the station, and I really appreciate her time.
Mm. And you just didn't ride around in a car with her.
No, I was in a big old bus. It was a real big old bus from the 1950s, and it made a lot of noise, and so that was a little intimidating to record, but it was a lot of fun.
Excellent. Why don't we take a listen to the story?
Thank you. The tour bus is big, brown, and more than 60 years old. It's made of steel and rounded on the edges, like the shape of an Airstream trailer.
My name is Miriam Jamila Javidi.
Miriam, the driver, is a tour guide for the Santa Catalina Island Company. She straps on gloves and tests the air brakes.
And testing the air brakes is pretty important because it's a special type of braking system for buses.
It's also important because Miriam is about to take 20 tourists around hairpin turns up and down steep Catalina roads without power steering. And she's going to try not to hit any golf carts on the way.
Can everybody hear me okay? Okay, my name is Miriam. I'm your guide today for the Skyline Drive.
Miriam didn't come to Catalina to be a tour guide. She started out as a field botanist on a nearby island. Later, she worked for Catalina's conservancy. Then she owned a landscaping company.
I came here to work with plants. I love native plants of Catalina.
One thing led to another, she said, and now, a decade later, she's a tour guide. Her tours usually go into the island's protected wilderness.
On our left-hand side, we've got the Catalina Island manzanita. That's this small tree with the bright red bark.
Here on Catalina, others talk about celebrities like Marilyn Monroe, Natalie Wood. So there's a lot of different ways to introduce people to the island, but my backbone is usually more like an ecology tour because that's what I see when I look around. You know, I see that, you know, eagle nests and fox dens and squirrel city at Hay Press and, of course, our, you know, famous bison that everyone loves to see.
How many have we got? Has anybody counted?
24.
That's a pretty good-sized herd for Catalina. We only have about 138 buffalo here, so this is 24 out of the 138. Somebody else do the math. They don't pay me for that.
Not all of Miriam's jokes go over well, but that doesn't stop her. And she loves it when people show that they're enjoying the tour. That might be by laughing, asking questions, or just taking pictures. One of her favorite moments was when two schoolboys were joking around and making a lot of comments.
So when we were taking a break, I said, you know, you two can come on my tours anytime because you laugh at all my jokes. And Andrew, one of the boys, said, yeah, I even laugh at the ones that aren't funny.
Being a tour guide is a lot of work. Not only is Miriam driving an old bus up and down bumpy, windy roads, but she's talking on a headset pretty much the whole time, for almost 2 hours. And she's only been on the job for 3 months, so she's still studying the craft of holding her passengers' attention. She's figuring out what her style should be. Jokes are important, but silence might be too.
What we have recently discussed in one of our staff meetings is that it's nice to have silent time or quiet time on the tour. They've said that about a third of your tour should be quiet time so that people can just experience for themselves without listening to you drone on and on and on, you know. A third of the time seems like a long time to me.
This is a beautiful view of one of our coves. It's called White's Landing, and it's the island's longest...
On ride-alongs with other tour guides, Miriam has noticed that for many of them, it's an act. That's not to say that it's a bad act, but her impression is that the guides don't even think about what they are saying. They've said it too many times. Miriam wants her tours to be different.
Sometimes it's easy for a guide to just turn it on and turn it off. You know, the spiel comes on, the spiel comes off, you know. And so what I like to do is make sure I ask little questions of the audience, like, hey, what do you guys think about that idea? Or, okay, we'll put it up to a vote. Do you want to take the detour or not?
Catalina Island is a resort community. It only has about 4,000 year-round residents, but it can get close to 1 million visitors a year. Day trippers, families, cruise ships. Miriam says that her job has given her a new appreciation for the people who visit Catalina.
Tourists kind of used to be like these annoying people that block up the streets and stand in the middle of the street and take pictures while they eat an ice cream cone, like that kind of thing. And now that I've been doing the tours, everyone has a story.
And she sees the island with fresh eyes, too. She said that if you stay here long enough, it's easy to take things for granted.
You can get into that like, oh, ho-hum, I'm so bored with it, you know. And then when you're introducing someone else to it and they're smelling white sage for the first time or they're seeing Little Harbor for the first time, you know, then you go, oh, yeah, I remember. Like, I remember what it was like the first time I saw Catalina, you know, or the first time I smelled white sage.
If you enjoyed your tour today, my name is Miriam. If you did not enjoy your tour today, my name is Sophia. Miriam. Thank you so much for spending some of your vacation time with me, and I hope to...
For KISL on Catalina, I'm Julia Oliver.
I wanted to smell that white sage, you know, get out there in the hills with that bus. That sounds fun. Great way to spend a summer or weekend.
Absolutely. And I really mean that. I think that being a radio producer is one of the greatest jobs you could have because you just, I don't know, all you have to do is follow your curiosity and worlds open up for you because you have a microphone. It's really a great thing. And I'm very much hoping that Julia starts making a podcast for the World Bank. I mean, hello, wouldn't that be great?
Absolutely. And I want to remind listeners or to greet new listeners and tell them what we're doing today. We are representing the Transom Traveling Workshop that has been on Catalina Island for the last week and presenting profiles of Catalina Islanders. And we're about halfway through our program.
And Transom, for those who don't know, is a website, transom.org. And it's really an incredible resource online. Of course, I work for them, so I'm paid to say nice things, but I actually mean it. It's a really awesome website for learning the tools and getting inspiration for producing audio stories. And I should mention, too, that Transom is part of a larger organization called Atlantic Public Media, which is basically the nonprofit of Jay Allison. And public radio listeners will probably know Atlantic Public Media because APM produces the Moth Radio Hour. They produce America's Test Kitchen. The This I Believe series from a few years ago on public radio came through Atlantic Public Media. So it's all located on Woods Hole, and we do these traveling workshops around the country. Earlier in the year, I was in Williamstown, Massachusetts at Williams College with a week-long workshop. I was in Michigan earlier this month. We are on Catalina doing training. I'll be in Missouri later on in the year, and so on and so forth. It's really great to be able to come to these places and learn about them. And our next student is...
Rachel Swaby.
Yay. Thanks for coming all the way from New York City to be here.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
What do you do in Brooklyn?
I'm a journalist, a print journalist.
What's the difference? What have you learned was the difference between, let's say, writing for the page and writing for radio?
You have to be, you're supposed to be clear in print, but you have to be really clear in radio. Really, really clear, as I learned going through the editing process. It was a great exercise.
How so? Can you give it off the top? I know I'm hitting you hard here, but can you think of what do you mean by clarity? What has to be so clear?
Well, for instance, I'm a fan of long sentences. I like commas, colons. Those things were stripped out of the script over time, and it definitely reads better for it.
Great. Do you think that will change your print writing at all?
Maybe. I mean, I think it'll make me look at the same story in a different way and wonder if there might be a tighter way to tell it.
What do we need to know about the story that you produced here this week?
Well, I went out on a boat with Renzo Sampson, and I think that's all I'm going to tell you.
Fair enough. Let's take a listen.
Come on down.
The Seawolf looks like a blown-up version of a toy submarine. It's small, more like a Disneyland ride than a naval vessel. Tourists climb down into the belly of the boat to look out underwater windows to ogle the sea life. Lorenzo Sampson is the boat's captain.
Now this fish that you're seeing here that keeps looking in the window, that's the calico bass. He's very much the velociraptor of the cove. Okay, he's not the biggest fish. By a long shot, he seems to be the smartest.
Lorenzo pilots the ship from up top in the open air.
It's always hard to do paperwork in the wind, but this is my office.
And when he calls it his office, he's not kidding.
It looks like a stool, but that's my desk. And I have right here, it looks like a clipboard, but this is my laptop.
Lorenzo supplies, binoculars, an air horn, and a rosary. Lorenzo steers the Seawolf to Lover's Cove. The tour is 45 minutes, but the trip is short. Just a little out and back to the shallow area next door to Catalina Island's main port. Lorenzo is a good talker. When you're talking to him, he can speak like he's giving a tour, even when he isn't.
And as you can see up there, looks like a school of marine mammals up ahead of us. And those are commonly known as snorkelers. The problems start when these seasonal migratory creatures attempt to swim under the boat like the fish. They are not as good as swimmers, and they're certainly not as safe. Although highly intelligent, they're highly unpredictable.
Lorenzo is always on alert. Once with a full boat of passengers, he played an unintentional game of chicken with a barge.
There's more times than I can count where I've had a close call or something will happen where I stop paying attention for a minute and look up and then, whoa, hang on there, wake up, Renzo, and I'll think, wow, there's no way I could have got out of that jam without my Nino Andy up in heaven looking down helping me out.
Nino Andy is Lorenzo's godfather. In fact, 5 generations of Lorenzo's family have grown up on the island, which means 5 generations have grown up in and around the sea.
So the history of the boats with our family is huge.
It began with his great-grandfather. Harry Busingier.
Harry the Monk. They called him that because of his agility and his ability to handle himself out here on the docks and the boats, literally walking on boats' dock lines from the pier to the boat itself like a trapeze artist.
But when Lorenzo was a kid, he imagined flying over the boats, not traveling in them. See, Lorenzo wanted to be a seaplane pilot, all his brothers did. But because of a congenital hearing defect and terrible vision, both since repaired, flying wasn't in the cards.
And it's funny how fate has it that sometimes you end up where you didn't really plan.
At 11 o'clock on July 28th, 1975, and yes, he remembers it exactly, Lorenzo was about to start a lunch shift at a restaurant. And then the phone rang.
My cousin called me up and he said, "Captain Eddie wants to hire you, come on down." So I ran. Like I say, after that, it's all history.
Today, Lorenzo manages a fleet of 5 tour boats owned by the Santa Catalina Island Company. He's developed a special relationship with all of them.
Oh yeah, they definitely have their character. The matriarch is a Blanche W.
Blanche W is a low-slung 98-passenger boat. She sits on the water almost like a streamlined red, white, and blue wooden swan.
It's got a big trumpet horn on top of the wheelhouse. Okay, that would be the Blanche backing up. And then the other ones, it's like a riverboat. Doot, doot, doot. How'd I do?
Islanders hold a special place in their hearts for the boat. However, maintaining a 90-year-old wood-hulled boat is challenging and costly.
Again, it's a labor of love and a love of labor to be able to keep that boat passing Coast Guard inspections like we've been. I'm tied into it, but it's not making me any younger, giving my all for the boat.
The Blanche W is scheduled to retire at the end of this season, but Lorenzo's not sure the tour company will be able to go through with it.
It's a tough call, but of course you love it, and when you see it come back every year, everybody kind of nods their head and goes, "Yeah, the Blanche is back."
What he doesn't want is the Blanche W to go the way of the Phoenix. That boat was decommissioned after 95 years of service, purchased by non-islanders, and then it sank, mysteriously. For Lorenzo, the Phoenix's end still stings.
We're going to do the loop out front and then make our way in.
Lorenzo steers the Sea Wolf back to shore, passing the Blanche W and the rest of the fleet on its way in.
Thanks, Captain.
Lorenzo wishes for a more respectful conclusion for the Blanche W, one that honors the boat, her history, and how special she is to the people of Catalina Island.
We're hoping that if they retire the boat, they take the pedestal with the ship's wheel and the control panel and put it in the museum.
And when considering his future, Lorenzo likes to say he hasn't lived his whole life on Catalina Island. Not yet, anyway. Lorenzo has worked on the water for 40 years. He doesn't like to think about his own retirement.
You just hope that in the end, that the crew just keeps on going. I don't want to think about it. It's not about me, because this whole thing is bigger than me.
For KASL, this is Rachel Swaby.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Hey, we got... Hey, they're starting to bring hot dogs into the station now. That's because the barbecue is going in full swing right now, and we want to invite all you latecomers to still come by Machine Gun Park. We've got a radio listening party going on with the Transom Story Workshop visiting on Catalina Island. I'm sitting here with Rob Rosenthal. Hey, Rob.
How are you?
And we've got some new visitors. There's a tiny baby, and there's Dave Weinberg.
Yeah, hello. I just wanted to jump on real quick. I just want to say a couple things. First and foremost to Rob Rosenthal, who is the best teacher of radio in the world. I have no doubt about that. I know that not only because I have, even though I help him teach this class, I actually have learned so much about radio, about teaching, and about people just from being a part of these workshops. And I also know that he's the best teacher. Oh, my daughter's...
Daughter wants to get on the air.
She's like a real mic hog. But also because if you look at the landscape of radio out there, a lot of the people who are telling the best stories on the radio were Rob's students. And I think you can just... Rob's handprint on so much amazing radio is astounding. And I just want to thank you so much for letting me come out here and teach you and for teaching me so much. And I also want to thank all the students because getting to experience radio through them, who are sort of like learning this for the first time, is like such an amazing experience for me, just because it's something I do every day and it's easy to forget how lucky we are that we get to do this. And so I just also want to thank you guys for letting me spend time with you all this week in KSL and the island, for being an amazing host every year.
Somebody better bring in some Kleenex for Dave here, too.
Well, for me as well. Thank you. Those are really kind words. Handshake, yeah. Not even a high five. A handshake, man. You're great. I'm hoping that we get to do this, well, next. We're going to do this next year.
Right? Yeah, oh, definitely. I'll definitely be here. I'll come even if there's no workshop. I'll just grab people off the street. Like, you're going to learn how to make radio. Get in here.
Excellent. And who's next?
My name is Mervin Deganos.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, no, I'm really happy to be here. Super excited.
Why did you want to do the workshop?
Because I love audio. I think last year I was reminded, a friend of mine decided, let's start a podcast. I said, okay. I learned how to put together a little bit of audio, and then I remembered just how much I enjoy it. I've played instruments since I was 3 years old, and I sort of stopped in college, and this is sort of me coming back to the medium and remembering how much fun it is to play here.
So you produce a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You came to the workshop. What was one of the tougher things that you had to try to overcome while you were producing a story here?
I think one of the biggest things is that, you know, you have an idea of what the story is going to be, and then when you actually go out in the field and actually do it, there's a part of you that doesn't want to let go of what you thought the story was going to be. So there's a moment where, you know, you have your come to Jesus moment and you realize, you know what, it's simpler than that. And once you actually accept that, everything sort of falls into place. So that was like one of those moments, those epiphanal moments.
It's sort of a lesson for life.
Well, I'm all into life lessons, so yeah.
We think life is going to turn out like this. We hold on to how we think it's going to turn out, and then...
Yeah, I think one of the things I've learned in the last couple of years is you can either be right or you can be happy. And I'm learning more and more as I get older. I want to be happy. Yeah. So. Mm.
But I do think it's important for listeners to know that we do some planning before people go out into the field. We think about what the story might be and what the focus might be based on the little bit of research that we've done and our intuition. We plan questions. We plan what we think the sounds might be. And as much of the planning that you might make, you know, you get out into the field, you find out, actually, nope, the world's a different place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything that you want to say about the story before we play it?
Nothing more than Conrado Vega is very, very generous. He's a wonderful guy, and I hope it comes through in the piece.
It does.
When Conrado Vega moved to Catalina Island 29 years ago, he spoke no English. Life could be terrifying.
Having people to come and talk to you and you don't understand a word of what they're telling you. That was scary. It was challenging at the same time, but that was very... very frightened.
These days, English is critical to Conrado's work. It's cruise ship day on Catalina Island. Not many cars are allowed here, so if visitors want to get around on their own, they'll need to rent a golf cart. On busy days like today, tourists can rent over 140, and they'll need Conrado.
Conrado Vega, I'm 58 years old, I'm from Mexico City.
Conrado wants you to love Catalina Island as much as he does. That's why if your golf cart breaks down, he's got a special tool, a golf cart tow truck.
It's just a tow truck, but it's a little one and a golf cart.
People are always taking pictures of it.
Especially when you actually have a car that you're towing.
Conrado's not just in charge of golf carts.
I'm the vice president of operations for Catalina Business.
The company owns two golf cart rental shops. It owns a 70-year-old candy and coffee shop. It runs a Segway tour. Oh, and it owns a storage unit business in Pebble Beach, too. And Conrado, he operates it all. Conrado wasn't always a business executive. When he lived in Mexico, he did something very different.
The line of work that I had in Mexico has nothing to do with tourism. I used to own a business of artificial insemination in cows.
For that job, customer service meant something else. It meant wrapping your arm in a rubber glove, pushing it into a cow, and making sure it got pregnant. Back then, a bad day didn't mean just golf cart DUIs.
Worst part can be is that your glove rips apart. Pull your hand out, shake your hand, wash it off, and go to the next one. I will do it again if I have to, but hopefully I won't have to. The only thing that I can tell you is that it's a lot nicer and rewarding to be able to be in a position where we need to take care of this, all these visitors, and to give them a great time on the island. It's a very special thing.
Taking care of others is in Conrado's blood. Growing up in Mexico City, he remembers his parents' kindness. His family didn't have a lot, but his mother would take strangers home and cook them food. Sometimes, she even let them stay a few nights.
Did it ever worry you that your mother was bringing strangers off the street into your house?
Many times we did. Strange at the time for me, but now that I'm older and look at that, kindness is always something that I have experienced since when I was a little kid. So it's something that becomes part of you.
The Mexican economy was bad. Back then, Conrado just vacationed in Catalina visiting his wife's family. Eventually, though, he moved here for work. Conrado was working at his first Catalina Island job. His boss asked him for a tool.
I did not know what it was. And I keep asking him, and my broke English at the time, to give me more explanation, more definition of the tool, so I can try to figure out in my head what he was looking for. So he actually took the time to take me to the toolbox and show me what the tool was. And I thought that was something that I would remember for the rest of my life. He gave me the opportunity to keep moving forward. So that's the moment that I felt that I had a chance and that there were people willing to be part of this community.
Conrado is a true islander now. He and his wife Rosa raised his three kids here. Two graduated from Stanford and one's now at Harvard. He's a grandfather.
I always tell people to tell me what's beyond proud, because that's where I am.
He's watched his employees go from 10th graders to having their own families. A few still work for him. The man means it when he says he wants to help others grow like he did.
To be part of this community, this is a great, great community. It's such a wonderful place. I'm just in love with this place.
Conrado's become a key part of the island. He gave me a tour around town.
We have our one and only Leo's drugstore.
Why do you say one and only?
Because that's the only drugstore in town.
He checks in on his employees.
Morning, Belen, Myrta.
Good morning. How are you?
He even showed me how to work a golf cart.
And this is what you're going to hear. We're going.
Golf carts, his workers, his family, the island community. Conrado cares for it all. Did I mention he hikes? 3 times every week. His feelings for Catalina shine through when I ask him what he'd do if he retires. The first thing that popped into his head?
Explore more Catalina. There's plenty of places that I haven't seen. So, not only Catalina, but there are different places as unique as this one.
He eventually talked about spending time with his kids, about helping teenagers become successful. But that first thing, Conrado loves Catalina Island, and he hopes you love it too. On Catalina Island, for KISL, I'm Mervin Deganos.
The thunderous applause from the people out in Machine Gun Park. Conrado Vega, thank you so much for that interview.
And we hope that you will make your way down to Machine Gun Park into KISL and join us listening to the last couple of radio stories. And I have a hunch there's going to be some dancing after all of this, right?
I don't know if you can call that dancing. I've seen these people before. Yeah. They're going to be moving to the music, though.
Excellent. Yeah. Great. And there's barbecue for folks. It's free. So just please come on down and join us. The weather is absolutely perfect. And so are the stories. You're listening to 9 radio stories produced by students who 7 days ago, there were no radio stories. And 7 days later, we're here and we have an hour and 15 minutes or so of broadcast quality radio pieces. And I have to thank the students for really putting, you know, so much sweat and effort and love into their pieces. And it's been stunning to spend the week with them.
I think for the average person on the street, they just imagine that it's you and a microphone and you ask some questions and that's it. But it's a lot more than that, isn't it? There's so many ingredients.
Yeah, I would say that. Do we want to run through the steps? Why don't you introduce yourself and then we will, I know I'm putting you right on the spot. You're welcome. And we can run through the steps. Ready? So introduction.
I'm Netta Freja. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
So the first thing we did was we handed out gear and we talked about how to use the gear. Do you remember what we did next?
No.
Okay, so I'll run through it. we planned the stories. You know, we went around the room and we talked about who the people were in the stories, and we thought about what the stories might be about, and then we planned the interview questions and what the sound might be. And then the next morning, Tuesday, everyone went out into the field and they did their recording. And then Tuesday afternoon, you come back, and we talk about what we learned. We go around the room again, and we find out all the ways that we were wrong about what we thought the story was about, and all the ways that we were right as well, and what the new focus for the story is. And then Tuesday night, you guys go through the tape. What's that like?
That was a totally new experience for me, and I was very humbled by the process. It was time-consuming and exacting, and you're really listening to your tape to find what pieces pop, what sounds good to you, trying to think of a rough order for how your different segments might go. So it actually felt like a pretty long and complex process.
It's a bit medieval, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. A little.
Going through the tape and finding the quotes and then typing out the ones that you like,
you know,
and transcribing them. Yeah, it's not... it's tough. and then Wednesday, we talked about digital editing, and we talked about writing for radio. And then Wednesday night, you had to write a script.
That was actually a lot more fun than I thought it would be. It was really enjoyable. We got to write our narration pieces. We got to think about how we might want to interact with our subjects for the stories. I think we all felt that the script writing was a lot of fun.
And then Thursday, it was about editing. And we would sit in groups, and we'd do a group edit so that everyone's an editor as well as a producer, and we'd go through the scripts and talk about what worked and what didn't. And then it's Thursday afternoon, we'd do another edit. Mm-hmm. It was one-on-one. And then maybe people tweaked their stories on Thursday evening. And then Friday morning, what happened?
We put it all together in sound. We made sure that it sounded fluid. We kind of combined. We laid out our whole story in the software, and we were able to actually make a radio story out of it.
And you had to narrate, right? You had to come in and record your voices.
Yes, thank you for reminding me about that. Yes, that was one of my favorite parts.
Why?
It was just so much fun. You gave us so much good coaching.
Yeah, but you get... Well, okay. But it's also... It's a little performative, too, right? There's a little performance that's required for narrating a story.
It's true. There were times where I was very monotone, and you're like, how about you say it like this, with more punch, and that helped.
Yay. And then you assemble everything, and then now we're here.
It's crazy.
Having barbecue and playing radio stories.
I cannot believe it.
What do you want to tell us about your story?
The person I met became very special to me over the course of our time together, and I think I have made a new pen pal for life.
Yay. Hmm. Thanks. Let's take a listen to the... Do we need to introduce any? I don't think we do. Okay, great. Let's listen to the story.
Marie Whittington has a lot of stories. She's 94 years old.
94 is a lot of years, you know.
Most of these stories have to do with messages. Messages sent, messages received, and one message she's still waiting for. Marie is a World War II veteran. She and her husband Edward were newlyweds when they enlisted together. He was a pilot in the Pacific, and she was a high-speed radio operator in Europe. It's been more than 70 years, but Marie still remembers every letter of International Morse code.
Da-da is A, da-da-da-da-da is B, da-da-da-da is C, da-da-da-da is D, dit is E. It was very, very interesting and kind of exciting because it was very important. The messages we were sending were all urgent ones. We had to get it right.
Marie spent most of the war in northern France in a small town called Chantilly. Her husband received a message of sorts, one that they believe saved his life. It happened while he was flying over the Philippines.
He flew into a very dense cloud, and he couldn't see whether he was upside down or what. And he said, God, you fly the plane. And then he heard this voice that said, you have seen me. And out in front of him was this white unicorn. And he led him right out of the cloud. Yeah. Isn't that a story?
She points to a unicorn that she embroidered. It's framed on her living room wall.
So we have a lot of unicorns all over the house.
While Marie was in Europe, she also received a message that changed her life.
And one day I was there in France. I was ironing my uniform. And the thought popped into my head that I should become a Catholic. And I thought, well, that's really weird. Where did that come from? There was no Catholics in my family. but it kept coming back to me.
She was baptized in Germany towards the end of the war.
And I've been a very happy Catholic ever since.
In fact, when I met Marie, she was on her way to church in her golf cart. I climbed into the back seat.
Just don't fall out.
I'll try not to.
Marie is impeccably dressed in a coral pantsuit and gold crucifix. Normally, her cane matches her outfit. She's lived alone on Catalina Island ever since her husband died in 1998. Her son and daughter live nearby. She has lots of friends. She's been on the city council. But her favorite part of the day is going to church.
This is my favorite place in this whole world, right here.
She takes her seat in the third pew on the left. In the middle of the service, Marie bows her head slightly. She closes her eyes and whispers a more private message.
Help me to be a better person. Please help me to be a better person. Stay with me always, Lord. Stay with me always.
Later, after church, I asked her about prayer.
When you pray, do you feel closer to your husband?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. I do. I talk to him a lot. I talk to God a lot. I don't get any answers, but I talk to them both. To God, I'm forever talking to him. He must get so tired of me. And I share my day with him, you know, from minute to minute. I'll say, I make comments about what's going on the television. What do you think about that, God?
And Marie Whittington is still waiting for one more message from God.
I don't know. I often wonder, what is it you want from me? And if could you please tell me so I can do it and leave?
After my morning with Marie, I couldn't resist asking if she had a message for me.
Enjoy your life. Laugh a lot. I recommend laughing. It's very, very therapeutic. No, you should just enjoy every day. Be aware of what's around you, the beauty that we have. That's what I would recommend to you.
On Catalina Island, I'm Netta Freja for KISL.
That's a really sweet story. That's just wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Marie Whittington.
We didn't talk about the fact that Netta's a physician. She's a doctor. And so she's come here to learn how to produce radio. And I very much hope that she comes to the dark side and leaves the whole, you know, the whole medicine thing. Just walk away from that and come on over.
And I'm so glad that the two of you talked about the steps that are required to get that radio story together, because I know there's people who are listening right now going, I want to do that. I want to learn how to make radio stories in that fashion. And if you are interested in coming out to Catalina next year, please contact us here at Island Radio. We do sponsor one or two Islanders every year to come and do the workshop. We would love to sponsor you if you're here on Catalina and you want to learn more about radio and be more involved in our station. So please do contact us. Our number here, 310-510-7469.
Excellent. Could you introduce yourself? We're gonna go into the last story. You're gonna take us out, girl.
This is Danielle Thompson, and I'm from Bozeman, Montana.
What brought you here? Why come?
Well, Rob, because I wanted to learn radio from you. No, it's true. That's the reason.
But you've already done some radio while you were in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
So what sort of skills were you hoping to pick up this week?
So I had done a couple pieces and had a very superficial understanding of the process. And working with you and David sort of took it to a whole new level in terms of becoming more efficient and understanding the art behind it. All these stories you've heard had like so many pieces and so many directions they could have gone. And the process of winnowing that down into a brief story is incredibly challenging. And it's an art. And you guys are the best people to learn it from.
And what was particularly challenging for you for your story?
So my guy, Charlie Canby, had so many incredible stories. I feel like I could have made a compelling half-hour piece of all of the parts of his life, and an incredible history of his family on this island. And just frankly, deciding what to leave out was painful.
Mm. It is. It's hard to well, yeah, it's wicked hard, as we say on Cape Cod, to leave out all these little gems, these bright, shiny objects, but you really need to pare it down to the essential. You tweeted something in the last day or so saying something about how this week has changed your life. What do you mean?
Well, it has. I have wanted to make radio a career for all of my adult life, and it's always been a fantasy. And now it feels like it's within my grasp.
So I can tell you it is. So when you go back to Montana, we're going to hear more from you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Let's listen to your story. And if everybody would, who is in the workshop, if you guys could come in while Danielle's piece is playing, and so we can say goodbye as a group, that would be awesome.
Yeah, this is going to be the last story of the workshop presentation. And I want to remind folks, if you did miss some of the earlier stories, that we will be putting it up on the station website, and you'll be able to listen later on.
The Catalina Chimes Tower sits on a hill overlooking the town of Avalon and its sparkling bay. At the base of the tower is a tiny mechanical room. Inside, Charlie Canby introduces me to a machine he has loved since he was a little boy.
This cabinet, this steel cabinet with the beveled glass door and the marble face, and there used to be a clock there, is what I would marvel at and look at. You know, I'd stand there for 15 minutes waiting for it to go through its sequence and strike again. It just fascinated me. And then this generator down here would turn on, and I'd watch the generator start, and then moments later the mechanism would start to go through its motions or routine.
Charlie and his wife Claudia moved to Catalina in 1981. But as a boy, he visited the island every summer. Back then, he had no idea he would become the keeper of these chimes, and the fixer, and builder, and designer for so many people and businesses here.
Let me turn the generator on.
Today, he's showing me all kinds of things he's worked on around Catalina, and he can't wait to play the chimes for me.
Play your tune here with the Westminster Melody.
Another stop on our tour is his shop, where there's a lot to look at.
Handy, handy tool for deburring things.
It's well organized, but crammed full of massive old machines.
Disc sander.
He clearly loves each one and has a story to go with all of them. After showing me around, we talk about how he learned his trade. When he was a kid, he spent hours in his father's shop. He fixed bikes. He built a go-kart. He made underwater camera cases. Later, he got an engineering degree, and he became a ship engineer. Then, he met someone who gave him a new idea about how to spend his life. It had a profound effect on him.
And I would go up and visit my friend Jim Higman in Santa Barbara, and next door to him was a guy that worked out of his shop, and he had an idyllic life, I thought. And I said, "What's he doing?" And he said, "Oh, he just does odd jobs for people and makes things and does cabinet work and such." And I thought, what a life that is. And I always remember that. That's where we are right now, in the shop, just working out of my house, live upstairs, come downstairs and make things and fix things for people.
Catalina is filled with historic buildings and boats. When residents can't find the parts to repair an old ship whistle or a grandmother's clock or a spinning Art Deco chandelier, they call Charlie. If he can't fix it or find the right part, he can make something to do the job, like he did with the 26 flagpoles that surround the Avalon Casino. It's the town's most striking landmark and another stop on our tour. He unlocks the service elevator and slides the first heavy steel door. Then a gold-painted steel cage that looks like prison bars.
Well, the worst thing to do is have the elevator break with me in it because I'm the guy that fixes it. That little motor up there is what gives me a lot of grief.
Charlie cracks jokes about his work, but he's serious about serving his customers and the machines.
As I work on them, I think about the design and, you know, I say design of machinery can be artistic. People think that art is just limited to painting and music, but a well-designed piece of machinery is really a piece of art.
If the casino building is the most visually iconic symbol of Catalina, the chimes are its most recognizable sound. Back at the chimes, Charlie and I climb up a ladder to a very rickety platform where the bells sit. I'm scared, but he's totally comfortable. So what do the chimes mean to you, and what do the chimes mean to Avalon?
There's sounds that are distinct to places, and the chimes is really that thread. You know, going back to 1926, it's been continuous.
Charlie has also become a constant in this town. At 68, he's going strong, but he does think about the future.
As for me, I'll probably keep coming up here. My son Fletch will take over repairing them, but I can't see why I won't be coming up here for many more years.
We head back down to the mechanical room, and the keeper of the chimes locks up for the night.
We're all set. Chimes playable? Yes. So that's good news.
Good.
All secure.
For KISL, I'm Danielle Thompson on Catalina Island.
That was really wonderful. I knew we needed to end with that piece, to end with the iconic sound of the island. And thank you so much for producing such a wonderful story. We applauded off mic. I think we need to applaud on mic.
There you go.
Thanks.
We've gathered everybody in the studio, all of the Transom Story Workshop, Transom Traveling Workshop on Catalina students. Thank you guys for just such a stellar week. You've given us a gift, and I think you've given the island a gift too, and I know that these stories are going to keep playing over and over and over again on the station.
Absolutely. On behalf of the station and everyone here on the island, we are just so impressed and so thankful that all these stories turned out as well as they did. We're going to save them forever.
Marco, Jordan, David, thank you too, for all three of you, rather. Also, two as an also. but thank you also for all the great support you've provided us over the week. We couldn't have done it without you guys. Thank you so much. And I think we should just go outside and party. What do you say?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we really appreciate the fact that you've been listening and to all these great stories. Yes?
We have something to say. God, I already said my piece, but we just want to thank again all of Jordan, David, and Rob for such an incredible week. We have a little something for you. And anyone else want to add anything?
Okay, so a paper bag is being produced.
This is a
here.
Shameless plug. This happens to be a book written by Captain John. It is available for sale at Aficionados Gallery Store. And it is signed by everybody in the classroom.
Oh, no.
Thank you.
And we also have a card for David. Thank you so much.
There you go.
Also from...
Well, congratulations and thanks are in order to everyone. I want to give a thank you on behalf of the station also to Jordan Monroe for being the legwork and the brains behind this operation this year. Thank you, Jordan Monroe. Give him a hand. And to the board of the Catalina Island Performing Arts Foundation that trusted us to do this zaniness and make it happen now for the third year in a row. You are incredibly trusting people. Thank you.
So everyone, go forth and tell good stories.
And with that great word of advice, we're going to turn you back over to the station automation. We're also going to invite the Transom students to play DJ all afternoon as long as they want, or jump in the ocean, or just enjoy that celebratory moment when you know you did a great job. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Yay.
You're listening to KISL Island Radio.
Get out of your studio.
Oh, everything is off. Everything is, I turned off the nuclear button, so
okay,
button.
Soon spring forgets. I wanna hold time, say it'll never begin. Old man to be afferent. Old man went to be afferent.